from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 104, recorded October the 2nd, 2025. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and I am joined by Joe Adalian from Vulture. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Always good to be back here.
You know, I finally subscribed to Vulture and New York because I had to, because you just
because,
write...
Because not because you had to, because it's a great bargain.
I had to.
Lots of great entertainment.
Because you just write so much good stuff that I have to read it. Is what
but
I
for
was
any of
say.
Your listeners, for $5 a month, you get access to the entire New York Magazine suite. It's great stuff. Actually, less than that sometimes. So there you go.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's my little pitch. It'll probably be
I did it. I let me tell you, it feels really good to not hit the paywall at Vulture anymore. It feels real good.
Reading feels good in a place like that.
It does. And I like supporting media on the web. So I've added it to my list. We should jump into it. Joe, as I was recording, or just as I finished recording, while I was prepping the files for the last episode with Will Carroll, a friend of mine texted me and said, ABC just pulled Kimmel off the air. So it's been 2 weeks. When I was in Memphis, Tennessee, I was like, it was all just kind of like, it's been an interesting time. You have written a lot. You were on this whole story. Now, of course, Kimmel got pulled off, and then they talked, and then he came back, and he made a highly rated return, and he's gotten support from all the other late night hosts, and there's a lot of speculation here. And we should probably start there, although I do ultimately want to also talk to you about your piece about affiliates and the network affiliate relationship. But why don't we start with if you've got any, now that it's been 2 weeks, your thoughts overall about what is going on with ABC and Bob Iger and Jimmy Kimmel and everything going on over there.
Sure. You know, look, it was a really extraordinary time. It was 2 weeks that felt like 2 months. I will say this. There were a lot of people, including the president of the United States, who claimed that Kimmel had been canceled. And I think Kimmel's first instinct, and he's said this to Colbert on his show recently, he sort of thought that it was over for the show, too, at one point, at least the day it happened.
Yeah, he said that.
But the thing is, I really do think that for better or worse, and whether it was the right way or not to do it, I do believe the official spin from Disney, from sources close to Disney, people familiar with the situation, let's just put it that way, that this was just meant to cool some time, because, you know, obviously there was understandably a sense of Kimmel when he heard all of these allegations from people on the right that he had slandered Kirk and he said this and said that, okay, once again, another bad faith campaign. And of course, you had the FCC commissioner, Brendan Carr, weighing in. All of this is true, right? There was a lot of bad faith. There were people, you know, Benny, what's his face, the podcaster. I've refused to know, it was Johnson, I think. Fundamentally, like, you know, this wasn't even really a thing that much for a day. Like, normally when someone says something outrageous in this media environment, it's within 6 hours, you know, everyone's reacting, right?
Right.
If it's organic, because there's lots of ways for it organic. But it really wasn't. It was engineered by a little Fox News website story, and then the podcasters pick up on it, and then Brendan Carr sees an example opportunity, and they all pounce. And understandably, Kimmel's first blush was like, "Screw this! I'm going to tell you what I meant to say." Unfortunately, I went and, you know, we almost at Vulture considered like getting an English professor to sort of, you know, diagram his sentence to try to sort of as to what he was saying. Unfortunately, the way the joke was written, there is a bad faith way, assuming the worst of him, of thinking that he was in fact saying, "I'm saying this guy was a MAGA person." Now, you can also make the case, so what if he did, right? Given what...
Sure.
Everything blames the left on, but he wasn't. And I really don't think he was. I think he was trying to make a joke, not even a joke, but a comment on early on, there was a lot of uncertainty. The guy came from Utah. His family looked Republican. There were people saying, oh, no, it's actually Groypers. It's this. And so there was people on the right were trying to push back on that, as they always do, because they're already ready to blame it on a trans person or this person. And anyway, he was commenting on that. But the way it was written, it left some room, and that gave an opening. And then once, you know, not only the FCC commissioners, but two of ABC's affiliate groups made it very clear to ABC, we're going to pull the plug. They said, okay, this is big, because now it's not just Disney versus the right. It's Disney versus the people who pay the bills
yes.
at ABC, because in 2025, network TV is in a lot of the reason you still have broadcast networks is because of the cable bundle, which goes through the affiliates, and the affiliates give their cable money to the networks. And that's what sort of makes the case. So I think Disney sort of said, we got to do something. And while it would be great to think that they would be able to instantly come up with a way for Jimmy to say what he said on eventually would have say on Tuesday, I think they were not wrong to suggest that it maybe made some sense to cool things down.
Well, it also allowed other voices to
yep.
bring up other issues. And then this is a thing, and all the late night hosts mentioned it, and they all made the exact same joke, which is, I really hate to agree with Ted Cruz, but Ted Cruz is right. They all said that, a version of that. But it did allow people on the right to come out and say, hey, you know, Brendan Carr saying we can do this the easy way or the hard way is bad, because what that's doing is that is the most obvious and blatant weaponization of the FCC in order to control speech. And I think some conservatives said, oh, that's bad, because if the conservatives are not in power, they're going to be able to use this same, like, nobody should be able to do this. And so Ted Cruz, for example, saying essentially free speech is important and it works both ways, which of course it is, and of course it does. But we live in an era where there are a lot of people who make claims that don't seem like they conform to of course. So to have those people, multiple people in the Republican Party, say what Brendan Carr did is wrong. And I think Ted Cruz said, I hate everything Jimmy Kimmel said, right? Which is, I think we can debate what he actually said and what he meant, but he was sort of like defanging. He was saying, it doesn't matter that I hate what he said. Brendan Carr should not be using the power of the FCC to threaten Disney's business over something that a comedian said. And like, by waiting, those sort of things got to happen. And that got to be part of the conversation, which created some real backlash, and Brendan Carr had to be like, oh, that's not what I meant, which is, it's totally what he meant. And so in the end, I agree. I think there was some wisdom to it. I'm not quite sure. I mean, also, a lot of people got mad. A lot of people canceled Disney Plus. A lot of creatives felt betrayed by Bob Iger. It's a stain on Bob Iger's reputation. And, you know, they could probably have handled it better, but I do kind of understand the idea of wanting to cool this down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, the way you describe all that, by the way, it really, in the best possible scenario here, and we were going to have to wait a few years to see what plays out next and what happens the next time, because there will be a next time. But in potentially, this could be sort of like a vaccination of sorts, right? You know, when you go and get your COVID or flu shots, especially your COVID shots, yeah. you know, the next day, especially the first ones, you feel really bad, right? Or if you get a shingles shot.
Yep.
And you feel really bad, and there's pain. Exactly. And did you get yours recently?
I did it. I did a couple days ago. Yeah.
It still hurts. Oh, my God. This, yeah, I'm hearing this one's anyway. So, you know, but it's ultimately, it ends up being worth it, you know, unless you're in MAGA, in which case you think you've, you know, you got a chip and you're going to,
yeah,
whatever.
It's 5G. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
You get great cell reception.
Exactly. But you know, so in some ways that does, and it does hopefully paint a way forward for future things like this. But, you know, yes, I do. The question, the idea of not following up a day later with a more definitive statement.
Yeah,
but, you know, that could have
real bad.
But it also, any sort of statement could have, you know, they needed to sort of allow for the, you know, if in my heart of hearts, you know, I never believed that they really were going to get rid of him, because if they did, they would have, or they would have within 24 right. hours. They wouldn't have let it fester. They had conversations, you know, they didn't, and, you know, and they wanted to wait and see how things, you know, if they had come out even with a follow-up statement, which part of me thinks they should have, on the other hand, that could have also inflamed the right.
Sure.
The right maybe needed to feel that they had a scalp, and the left needed to feel like it had some agency. You know, people have said, we did this, we pushed back, this wouldn't have happened. I'm not so sure, but it didn't hurt. You know, it always helps for dist companies like Disney and politicians too to see that sort of reaction for Sinclair and for Nexstar, which are sort of drunk on power and their perception that the only thing that matters in the world is MAGA, right? It doesn't matter that it's only 35-40% of the country at best, you know, and then there's the rest of the reason they're in win elections is because people don't vote, or they get a decision, they don't like the Democrat or their race or whatever it is. But, you know, MAGA, hardcore Republicans, are only about 35-38% of the country. The reason they win is because independents sometimes vote with them as the lesser of two evils. You know, I think that there was some wisdom in that. I don't want to give too much credit to Disney and say that Bob Iger and Dana Walden are evil geniuses, but Dana Walden used to be a publicist. She was a good publicist. And I think, you know, sort of, even if it's pretending to let there be consequences, you know, and even the statement when he came back, they did a little bit of a nod. Hey, you know, we thought that this was potentially insensitive, you know, but that was it. You know, there was no loss of salaries, none of that. Like, it was the best possible outcome. And I haven't written this, and I'm worried someone's going to read this or listen to this and say, oh, Adalian's saying it was all Disney's. No, I don't think it's Disney's master plan, but I don't think they were as cowardly and evil as some people on the left want to say.
Yeah, I agree.
Are they overly cautious? Well, it's in their DNA. I mean, their network and studio executives and corporate executives, of course they are. It's sort of like, you know, those videos where people are like, of course I'm this. That's a network executive. Am I going to wait five? Yeah. Am I going to do the absolute minimum to get ahead? Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a network executive. I'm a studio boss. I want to be the next CEO of Disney. So, you know, you've in Dana's case, you know, so yeah.
I think that's a really important thing. I would also say, they know their guy, Jimmy Kimmel, and anybody who knows Jimmy Kimmel, who has seen what he does and knows his background. And I would say this even goes for people on the right. I could detect the people who think he's something he's not, because they've just decided that every late night comedian is some combination of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers, and, right? Like, it's just like a straw man. Late night host. Jimmy Kimmel is different. He's ABC's guy. There's that, right? Like, he's the guy at the upfronts. He's doing the Oscars. He is their guy. But also, he's been very emotional. He's been very personal on stage. He's been choked up about the health issues of his baby, right? Like, and when I saw him come back and give that monologue, I was like, ah, yes, this is all of the Jimmy Kimmel. He is funny and smart and heartfelt, and he was able to thread that needle in a way that I think ABC knew he could and would, which is saying, look, I didn't mean anything by this. I was making a larger point, and let me restate. And he said that great thing about, you know, that not only is there no place for political violence, but there's a place for grace and compassion and forgiveness. And he used the widow of Charlie Kirk as an example. And I thought that is actually, I feel like Kimmel at his best is combining that kind of his empathy and his being overcome by emotion a little bit. I think that Jimmy Kimmel has those skills. And I've got to think that Disney knows perfectly well that Jimmy Kimmel has those skills and he was going to react like that.
Right. With time. Now, if he had given he couldn't have given the exact same speech the next day, right? Or the same day that he was going to, right, without being suspended, if the show hadn't halted production. Let's say he just came back and just gave the explanation. That might be true. It wouldn't have had the same impact, though, because then it would have been just him sort of saying, you idiots on the right, you're so upset. And I'm doing this even though my Sinclair stations, and because remember, Disney could have let him go on the air, but, you know, 25% of the country wouldn't have seen him.
Right.
You sort of needed to go through that. It's like that COVID shot again. You sort of need to sort of feel some of those things to marinate in it, to have stakes. And he also probably needed some more time to think about and understand the fury on the right, however manufactured it was.
And to to let the overreaction recalibrate and Brendan Carr to
that
back
too.
Off and
oh,
all
yeah.
of that too, because then by the time we got to Tuesday, I think, and he came back, it was that whole cycle had played out where, because I mean, Brendan Carr overstepped. He clearly overstepped and thought that he could just get away with it. And that was, you talk about inoculation. That was a really interesting moment where a whole bunch of people on the right said, no, you can't do that. And he's, you know, we'll see how it goes, but I think he's done himself long-term harm. Because he's limited in a certain way, he's limited himself, and I think that's interesting. But and they let him, you know, kind of let that play out and
potentially
and shoot himself in the foot.
But he's devious enough that he'll just sort of
sure.
a bad AI, he'll just find a way to recalibrate and get even more evil.
But
he'll project, I mean, this is a guy who contributed to Project 2025.
He showed us who he is, right? I mean,
yes.
When he said we could do this the easy way or the hard way, like a mafioso, which led to Ted Cruz doing.
I was just going
to
say, can we please? That's the best part of this.
If you can
insert this into that, was the best.
Like, it's not Goodfellas. He's thinking of The Godfather, I think, not Goodfellas.
Who knows what he's thinking?
And his voices are weird, and all the comedians are like, what is Ted Cruz doing? But anyway, that Brendan Carr showed us who he is, and I think that there was some value in that.
One last thing I do want to say too on this is that it also, this would be a lesson for other network executives and studio executives. What really helped here was that, in particular, Dana Walden and you know, she has built a strong relationship with Jimmy Kimmel the last 5 years. You know, you should go, if you Google Jimmy Kimmel, Howie Mandel, and it was a podcast maybe about a year and a half ago that I watched, you know, in the few days he was off, in which he talks about how his relationship with ABC was always sort of good, but not great. It was a little fine. But in the last 5 years, since the people from Fox, which means Dana Walden, came over, he said, I felt needed and loved. And, you know, it's in the actor sort of, you know, the performer sort of way of feeling appreciated. He even appreciated with nice big contracts before them, but he really felt seen by them. And that's because Dana Walden, one of her great talents, you hear this again and again from talent, is, you know, for the ones she really cares about and that are important, she will invest the energies in being there. And that paid off because Kimmel had to sort of trust. He could have come out with a statement, you know, if this would have been, David Letterman 25 years ago, he would have done an interview, he would have said something, right? Jimmy, even his people said there were no leaks from it. Trust me, I tried to get them. They were very, very, very deliberate about that. And that's because of that great relationship. So if you're running your company, be good to your talent. It will help you in difficult situations like this.
Exactly right. I mean, he, I think there was an element too of like, well, wait a second, him of all people, because he has been such a good soldier for them. But I think that in the end, the relationship did help. We should talk about the affiliates. You wrote a great piece. I'll link it in the show notes on Vulture about the TV network affiliate relationship, because especially for people outside the US who've been listening to this, this is one of the weird things about our system, is that there are individual stations in individual TV markets, and they are now, there are a lot of them that are owned and operated by the networks, but there are a lot that aren't. There are other companies that own those channels. So if you're in Sacramento, or you're in Portland, or you're in Seattle, or you're in Chattanooga, or wherever you are, you have a local ABC affiliate. It's probably not owned by Disney. I live in the Bay Area. I think almost all of ours are owned and operated at this point. But in smaller markets, that's not the case. Although over time, what's happened is there's been this is the thing, as FCC rules have changed, there has been an increased percentage of the country that is owned by a conglomerate or two, like Nexstar and who's the other guy?
Sinclair. EW Scripts.
We talk about Sinclair as the ones who did Diamond Sports and spun it off and put it in bankruptcy for regional sports networks. So that's a whole other story.
They're geniuses over there.
So that's part of the dynamic here. And it was Nexstar and Sinclair that said that they were going to take Kimmel off the air because they were so offended. And that was, I just want to get this out here before we get to your story, deeply disingenuous. Sinclair is a company that, and people can look up, like there was a John Oliver piece about it. They are run by a bunch of right wingers, and they and it's provable. I'm not making an opinion here. And they would put right wing talking points and mandate that they be inserted into their local newscasts. And so when you hear the FCC talk about things about community content, which is something that's kind of in the law, it's supposed to be content of interest to a local community. When you have a company that covers 30% of the United States, and they're just inserting their political talking points into the local news, there's no community service going on there. It's a national political service that's happening there. And so, you know, the fact that that Sinclair and Nexstar could say, well, you know, we're really protecting the good people of Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington from dangerous Jimmy Kimmel because it's not to their community standards, it's completely disingenuous. They have a political angle and they're going to press on it. The problem is that Nexstar wants to buy a whole bunch of affiliates and make and increase its percentage, which requires the FCC to approve that. So that is a dynamic that's going on here. And then, as your story points out, ABC and all the other networks make so much money. They are paid by these affiliates for being affiliates, and it's a huge revenue source for them.
Yes. Well, I mean, you've captured a lot of the big chunk of my story, which is the hypocrisy involved here, and the fact that, you know, there is an affiliate system in this country, and for most of the time that we've had television, you know, networks own some of their own stations, yes, but it was a network of stations, and
there's been local ownership,
and most of the time, and it wasn't until really the last 10, 15 years where you had these groups continually sort of owning more stations. And essentially now you've got networks and other networks that have that run other networks. It's this very weird thing because, you know, especially at a company like ABC, which has the least amount of owned stations, some others have, you know, there's currently a cap of, you know, you can only own stations that reach about 39% of the country. It used to be much smaller. You used to only be able to have one station in a market. Now, Sinclair and Nexstar will sometimes own multiple stations. Yeah. So when people during this whole thing were saying, well, ABC can just get rid of its affiliates and put the somewhere else, it's like, well, between ABC and in a lot of cities, Sinclair and Nexstar own all the stations.
Yeah.
There aren't any options unless you're going to get, you know. So, you know, but the thing is, even though, you know, they have a lot of power and own a lot of it, they sort of still want network content, Sinclair and Nexstar, up until this point, because, you know, it makes their stations more valuable when you have the NFL and primetime content.
For sure.
So those stations, because of something, another FCC regulation called must carry. So your local, whether it's a network-owned station or the Sinclair station, your local stations, and, you know, they get money from cable companies. Cable companies have to either carry the station, but in a wonderful thing that the FCC did years ago, they said you can either choose to just be carried or you can go for compensation. And of course, everyone chooses the money. So when you pay your $100 cable bill, or if you get through YouTube TV even, or Hulu with live TV, those companies make a deal with ABC, either individual stations or more likely now the station groups like Sinclair, like Nexstar, like the ABC stations group, or the CBS owned stations group, and they negotiate a fee, and that revenue goes to the stations or the station groups. The networks then take a part of that money, and the split is roughly 50-50. It used to be much different. It used to be that, you know, networks paid affiliates, and then it became reverse compensation, and now it's the opposite way. And so that revenue is essentially, it's not so much that Sinclair is paying ABC directly, they're giving ABC a cut of the money they get
from cable companies.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the beauty, because of local TV and the rules. It's so it really is a sort of messed up system that in many ways you could argue has outlived its usefulness.
For sure.
But networks like it, these companies like it, and I tried to raise the point of like, well, what about going direct to consumer? And there, it would be a lot cleaner if you just sort of said we're going to go direct to consumer, but it would mean giving up that revenue source,
right?
Unless they bought stations of their own, which they're not really want to do, and so you're sort of stuck. At some point, I think what has to happen is less of a complete divorce, as much as it is sort of these affiliate groups sort of saying, all right, we'll keep more of our compensation revenue, but we'll give some of it to you. But in exchange, you know, we can be a true competition and you can offer, you know, everything except maybe the NFL. We'll keep that exclusively. Mm-hmm. So if people want to sell, that's still a big chunk of it, but everything else can sort of be more direct in that way, you know, because let's face it, that's sort of what they're paying for these days, because so much of the entertainment content is next day. People are watching it on others. It's not that the entertainment content, like sort of some of the top shows, don't give some value, but you know, most of the value comes from the stuff people watch live, and then they need to watch either in a cable bundle, right, or they, you know, on or on over-the-air signals. So with that being the case, I just think there needs to be a reworking of the relationship so that, you know, networks have the freedom and don't have to be worried about sort of preemptions and things like that. And so they can sort of have more clean marketing. You know, it's ridiculous that you still people like, oh, well, does, you know, Abbott Elementary are on Tuesdays or it's Wednesdays? Well, if you watch it on Hulu, it's on Wednesdays. If you watch it on ABC, it's on Tuesdays. Or maybe right. I have the dates wrong. It's Wednesdays, Thursday. I forget where it is now.
Yeah, it's but next day on Hulu.
Exactly. So that whole thing is because, oh, you have to have a couple hours later, or, you know, or it's ridiculous the fact that, you know, NBC, when they launched Peacock, had a great, I think we may have talked about this on the show before.
They were going to show Jimmy Fallon live, I think.
And Seth Meyers, no, not live, but Seth Meyers and Fallon would be on like hours before.
Like so as soon as they Eastern, they'd post the episode.
The same time, basically, they start putting clips on YouTube, they would put the full episode on. And it made perfect sense because why not? Meth Elliott screamed, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. So now we're in a system where if you pay for Peacock or Hulu, you can't watch Jimmy Kimmel until then. So what do a lot of people do? And they want to see, hey, what did Kimmel say tonight? Especially, you know, last week when he was coming back from a suspension, they just go to Hulu. They go to YouTube.
And watch the clips on YouTube.
Yeah. And Disney gets paid a lot less from Google for it.
Right.
The affiliates get absolutely nothing. They've degraded it makes zero sense, when what they could do is they could actually air those sorts of shows live. And by the way, with geotargeting, you could have local commercials, because right now ABC did this with the Oscars. They worked it out with the affiliates. Or NBC does this with an SNL. When SNL streams live on Peacock, it's the stream.
You get your local local channel. Yeah.
And so that helps the affiliates because they get local ad time.
What this reminds me of is what is talking about streaming 10 years ago, which is everybody knows that it doesn't make sense in the long run, but there's too much money. And so it will take time for it to change. It strikes me here, it's really interesting because both sides have, you know, there's leverage on both sides, right? Like ABC, it's a good example. Like ABC, what are they going to do? They could in the long run say, you know what, in markets where we don't want to work with these guys, we're just going to go to the cable company and be in that market. And we're just going to make an ABC channel in that market. And that's what we're going to use. They could do that, but it's going to be really hard. And there's going to be lots of issues with money in the meantime. But if you are
a lot of money, I mean, it really is. That's the big thing.
But if you're Nexstar, being a network affiliate is a huge part of the value of your broadcast channel. And I can tell you, Joe, here in the Bay Area, there was a station that lost its network affiliation, and it was an NBC affiliate, and it was real high profile, and they had like a huge news team and all this stuff that they did. And NBC switched to a different channel, and that channel imploded. And now it's like an infomercial channel with a really weak newscast and not a whole lot more. So, and the value of that channel disappeared, basically it vanished. So that is what Nexstar and Sinclair and other companies like that have to fear, is that there's also a huge amount of value imparted by being a network affiliate. So they you know, ideally they got to work together and they got to be in sync, even though, on one level, it kind of doesn't make sense for network TV to be affiliated in the way it is. But that's just the historical system. So that's where we are.
Yep. Yeah. But the bigger thing is, I actually think we're moving to a point where and I've long felt this, and I wish the Democrats, if we had a functional Congress, they could have done this a while ago. But the FCC is outdated in so many ways. And broadcast TV, you know, and this is what makes Brendan Carr so loathsome to me, because as a Republican and wanting the free market, well, if you want that, then you should not be policing that speech. And not only forget about this political speech, but the fact that, you know, the kinds of content, you know, network dramas, you know, NYPD famously got, you know, sure, pushed the envelope briefly, and then advertise, and then they went back. It's yeah, advertisers police it, but also it can't be real. Like shows in every other country with broadcast TV, they are allowed to be real. So that means they have to make less good content. And with so much other, people know the difference. They know if you can't watch something that's realistic, that's why younger people have gone away in part. It's not the only reason why, obviously, but there shouldn't be this sort of restricting of what they can say and what they have to do. And you know, so yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's do some letters from listeners before
we get letters.
We get
lots
letters
and lots sacks of and letters.
Sacks of letters.
Letters.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Really quickly, Jim from the 615 says, you probably noticed, but if not, BritBox has a new tier. They're also promoting annual plans, but the new tier is BritBox Premier with 4K, more simultaneous streams, additional content, and earlier releases, $149 a year. This underscores what you and Joe have said about BritBox leaning into their product. I subscribe, but then I have everything, and I'm addicted to British TV. Thanks for the great work. Have a lovely weekend. Love to your mothers. Jim from the 615. Thank you, Jim. And good call out, BritBox. I love to see the niche streamers leaning into what they are. I love it.
And you know, and what this is really interesting too, and I just need to write about this, and I might at some point. But this premier tier is really interesting because, you know, BritBox also had, not BritBox, but the BBC, which sort of is now the full owner of BritBox again. Yeah. It used to be a split between ITV and BritBox, and now they have full ownership. You know, they used to have like a standalone. I forget what it was called, BBC Select maybe or something else. And it was just all the factual, as they like to call them over there. It's the documentaries and the sure. arts programming and the good stuff that we used to get on cable TV, but we don't anymore. But that they still do there. And so what this premiere is, it's sort of like it's that, it's news, it's all this other stuff. So you are getting more, and that's sort of a nice thing. And you'd love to see them sort of expanding the tiers. But also, I was just, ironically, Jim, from the 615, I was actually just thinking this morning, you know, or maybe early today, we're talking bundles, that, you know, why isn't there a BritBox and Acorn TV bundle and a PBS Masterpiece bundle? There should be your ultimate British bundle and all of those platforms. So if Amazon should do it, Apple should do it, someone should do it, but it's a no-brainer. And
international,
by the way,
bundle essentially is what it is. And they also have some great other kind of European content in there and Commonwealth content.
You could add an MHC choice or whatever, but like, you know, what's great about BritBox and Acorn is it's almost all English language, which is good. I think BritBox may have one or two shows, or Acorn may have one or two shows that are French.
I think they do have some French or Scandinavian or whatever, and that's fine too.
Right. Although I do think they all need to be dubbed, not just
get a French mystery.
Exactly. But you know, that would be the no brainer. And they need better. You know, we talk about Amazon having a bad user interface. The thing about BritBox and even Acorn is, if you've been in the actual apps, oh my God, they're not good at all, and it's impossible. So we need more curation. Yeah. Anyway,
more of that. Andrew, born in the 530, now in the 831. I love these area codes. This is a TV talk machine callback is what those are. Bouncing off Chris's question in episode 103, do you think the big streamers will implement the tech to be able to tailor the app or website to your preferences? If Will Carroll doesn't want to see any of the Disney Vault library, he could just filter it out from the carousel feed. How long before more tech features are implemented? I guess my answer would be, you know, if you listen to David Ellison, the implication is that he is aware that it might be a thing that they could do that would differentiate what they're doing with Paramount because the tech stacks are so bad. And I think this is one of those great examples where, like, personalization is not as good as it should be. There's some algorithmic stuff that they do, but like, yeah, you should be able to say, here's what I'm interested in, here's what I'm not interested in, have the interface change based on that. And like right now, I don't see a lot of that, but I think that's a great, I do feel like, at least maybe this is wish casting, but I do feel like in the next decade, one of the things that has to happen is that everybody in this business has to realize that their interfaces are terrible and they need to do a better job because it's where they touch the customer.
Including Netflix, which is the best in class, but still goes within a narrow frame of what it can be.
Like you said, it's almost as advanced as it is on some level, it's also stale on another level.
It's incredibly stale. It's the same thing. Yeah.
By the way, 10 years ago.
We're however long into this, like, give me the opportunity to make a playlist. Let me have, like I can on my Spotify or iTunes in back in the day, or still there's an iTunes, I guess, Apple Music. You know, let me sort of pick my mystery shows so that I can put them all in one place, click on a button, that they all come up. And by the way, if I want to, maybe do a rotation where, hey, I just play, you know, instead of binging one series through, especially with longers, what if I could just sort of put together, you know, when they were all in one place, Mary Tyler Moore and Bob Newhart and all these shows that are there, and just sort of program through or program. There are different ways of interactivity that you could do through you know, on mobile apps that could then carry over to the main app. It's a no-brainer, but yet no one's, I would think, but no one's at least tested it. Why not?
Yeah.
Am I crazy? I don't know.
No, I think this is my long rant here about how that a lot of these legacy entertainment companies are just so focused on the content and now they're focused on like the ad tech side, and that there's a real opportunity for them to improve the user interface side. And I hope they try to innovate a little bit, because there's a lot of Me Too out there where it's like, yeah, we'll do that and we'll have an algorithm. There's a lot of like algorithmic stuff. And I sure, algorithms are fine. Like, to use those to surface content is great, but like having better interfaces in general and trying new stuff out, I think it's important. One more letter from Ryan, who says, longtime listener, I love sci-fi. For example, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. This is for me, Joe. It's not for you. You can take this 5 minutes off. I've never watched Doctor Who. I'd like to get into it, but it's a bit overwhelming joining so late. Which Doctor Who series should I start with? Well, the good news is Doctor Who has now been on so long that it kind of doesn't matter, because it's been on like, it's impossibly long. It's been 60 years that this TV show has been on and off, but you know, it's off right now. It was off for a while in the 90s, but like, it's basically been around forever. My advice, and the problem here is, I don't know, is it still, I think it's still streaming on HBO Max. And if that's true, I would go back.
It's on Tubi. It's on Tubi. Is it on Tubi? The early 70s and 80s. You can say all non-Disney.
Don't watch those. This is what I'm going to say is, don't watch those. If you can watch, if you want to start with Doctor Who somewhere, start with the beginning of the 2005 series with Christopher Eccleston. That's where I would start, because that's modern Doctor Who and it will seem very familiar. I think the watchword at the beginning was, it's kind of like Buffy. It was like, what if Doctor Who but Buffy? And that I think it worked pretty well. If you want to go a little later, you could start with Matt Smith's first episode or Peter Capaldi's first episode. But I think personally, you should just start in season one, episode one of 2005 with Chris Eccleston. There's one season of that, and then move on to David Tennant. And you will get, because that was reintroducing that show to an audience that didn't grow up with it, because it had been off the air since the late 80s, you know, off the air or early 90s. It's gentle in its introduction of concepts about the show in a way that no other episode of Doctor Who is, since the ones from the 60s that were in black and white. And so I think that's, Ryan, that's where you should start.
This is good advice for me too, because I've often thought of becoming a Whovian. Is that the proper term?
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I mean, I think Whovian is like they're trying too hard, but yes, but regardless, I think that they had a really good run. There's some episodes, the first season, they're really grappling with what the show is. I think there are some moments in that first season where you're like, do they think this is a kid's show? Do they think that this is the Power Rangers? But I think they figured out, like, they're going for this family sci-fi where it's good for adults, but also younger kids can watch it and get a little scared. And then, you know, it evolves and grows with its audience. And I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. Classic show. It's just so old at this point that it's like, it's old. Television was different back then. And in fact, British television was even more different back then. I think a modern, especially American viewer would really have trouble. Not that there aren't gems in classic Doctor Who, there really are, but like, it's like from, I mean, the past is another country, right? Like, it is literally another country if you're not from the UK and in the past. And it's just, I wouldn't bother, because that's why they relaunched it in 2005, is to make you not have to worry about it too much.
See, if I did it though, I would, just so that I would get a little bit of nostalgia, I would just sort of make sure to play a video of the old school PBS identification.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what Doctor Who was all about, PBS.
Oh, sure.
And do.
Yeah,
you want
was,
that with the little...
It's
PBS
Tom Baker with a long scarf. After
exactly, that's
with
Doctor
a
Who.
PBS pledge break, for sure.
And that song, Doctor Who.
Sure. All right.
We've sung way too much on this episode. You probably lost multiple subscribers.
Way too much.
So I apologize.
Let's move on to the TV picks, where we tell you about a show shows that we would like to recommend that you watch in your travels. Joe, what do you have for me?
Well, let's continue with my British theme. I'll just become Mr. Brit. But there's but also PBS, because that's how you can watch it in the U.S. It's called The Marlowe Murder Club. Season 2 just dropped on the PBS, and I believe all the episodes should now be up on the PBS app or the Masterpiece app, which you should subscribe to for $5 a month, and
yeah,
you can help public
PBS
TV,
too.
Which is under attack. But
it's a great deal. PBS. I know we said it before. PBS Passport, $5 a month to your local PBS station, and you unlock a huge catalog of things in the PBS app. It's
yes,
great.
Including another show that I'm very late to, but that I'm enjoying, which is All of Creatures Great and Small.
Creatures Great and Small, so good. It's
which
so
is,
good.
Is a perfect show for the fall. I've just
so
reactivated
yes.
it. I'm like, still in season one, but I'm loving it. So no spoilers. But Marlowe Murder Club, just a standard cozy British mystery with a bunch of older ladies who sort of, not middle-aged, some are the middle-aged, some are older. It's three of them, but they sort of accidentally help solve a crime in this little town. Do you really need to know anything more than that? No, you don't.
Yeah,
I haven't seen season two, but I'm sure it's good. I think they changed formats a little bit, but it's very cozy. It's very good. But if you want something a little more American and that's not quite as cozy, but still in its own way, sort of just nice, fun, lean back TV. It also happens to be basically the biggest new show of last year, but it's back for season two and it's off to a pretty decent start. And that would be High Potential on ABC, which is based on a French series of the same name, although in French. And it stars the woman from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, whose name Caitlin Olson. I didn't realize she was from Sunny until like maybe six episodes into last season when I read some things like, oh, she was in Sunny.
Yeah,
because I've never seen Sunny. But is it good TV? The writing could be better, although if anyone who works for the show as a writer, it's not bad, but it's mostly a Caitlin Olson thing.
Yeah, maybe it's not bad. You got a charismatic lead, and the concept is that she's a working class, like blue collar worker, but she's actually got an incredibly high IQ. She's like cleaning up around the police station and then solves a crime. It's actually a little bit like it's coming from the opposite direction, but it's the same as premise as like a Ludwig, which was one of my favorite shows of this year, which is like it's somebody not qualified to be a cop who accidentally starts solving crimes, and the cops are like, I guess you solve crimes now.
That's half of British TV, by the way.
Yeah, I could come up with some other examples too. Ludwig is my favorite.
It's the perfect,
of the year. But High Potential is like that. It is an American network procedural,
right.
So it is. It goes down easy. It's kind of simple. There is a little bit of a story arc, but the performances are good. She's really great, and I've watched a few episodes of that, and I give it my stamp of network TV procedural approval.
Yeah, I want it to be even better. I wish it were. And sometimes they've gone sort of like trying to be too, like you can see the network knows, can we make this backstory a little bit more? Can we get, there's like a whole thing with a killer that carried over into the first two episodes of this season. It was like, oh my God. And now they're hopefully, when they focus on case of the week, it can be really fun and just sort of easygoing television. And then I enjoy having a new episode every
week.
And
the idea is she's not like, she's a not a cop in the cop, not a cop dynamic. She's a not a cop. And that's the fun of it is that she's solving crimes and working with cops, but her sensibility, I mean, it would be boring if her sensibility didn't clash with them. That's the whole point, is that she's brilliant, but she's not a cop. And it's I agree. It's a fun show. I'm going to have two picks. They're both on FX and Hulu. There's The Lowdown, which just started. This is Ethan Hawke starring. This is from one of the co-creators of one of the great shows of the decade, Reservation Dogs, set in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It is, I would say, the closest vibe I would come to it is maybe something like Bad Monkey. It's a scuzzy protagonist who you don't really believe, but he gets caught up in shenanigans. It's funny. It's messy. It's noirish. It's a really interesting cast of characters around. It is basically a love letter to Tulsa, Oklahoma. There are people you will recognize from Reservation Dogs beyond Ethan Hawke, who was in one episode of Res Dogs. I loved it. I think it's really good. It's rolling out. I think there are three episodes out now, but like it's a winner. It's fun. I shake my, it's the kind of show where you have a protagonist where you just shake your head and I'm like, oh, this dummy, what is he doing now? But in a fun way. I really like it. And I'll mention Alien Earth too, a very different tone. So ambitious by Noah Hawley, but I think it's a show that you think about it, it's about like alien monster xenomorph from Alien movies eating people, and it's like, oh, it's Yeah, it's that, but it's also about artificial intelligence and billionaires and lots of stuff. It's a great use of science fiction concepts to comment about our world in a really interesting way. Plus, there's multiple alien monsters that kill people on top of it. So I think Noah Hawley did a great job with Alien Earth. It's a kick. And if you're tired of the Alien franchise being ground into nothingness after the first two movies, I would say give it a look, because I think it's really interesting and effective and does a good job of representing what the good things about that franchise are or were or whatever. So those are my two picks.
Sounds good.
Yeah. This brings us to the end of this show. If you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you missed us talking about streaming price hikes and what's going on with Prime Video and about David Letterman and the fact that Joe talked to David Letterman. Basically, every other episode, more or less, a big chunk of the show is available just for our supporters. To support us, go to downstream.plus. You'll get the full version of every episode, access to the Relay Discord, which is full of very nice people, bonus shows from Relay. You get the episode ad-free and a whole lot more. And if you want to write to us, downstreamfeedback.com is the way to go. You can put in your area code if you like, or your country code if you're not from the U.S. Love to your mothers. We love hearing from you. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts at Relay and The Incomparable. Joe, where can people find you?
You can find me in the digital pages of vulture.com. Yep. And over on Blue Sky at TV Mojo, MOJOE.
That's right. And sign up for Buffering newsletter, which is free.
And that, yes. Don't
and
forget about
great.
That.
All right. That's it for this time. Until next time, thank you for listening once more. And Joe, talk to you next time.
Thank you, sir.